the grassroots at the bottom where we can start, you know, do something, you know, be in the at the bottom and start up, you know, start, you know, at the get the union together. And I hadn't had this opportunity. I want this to do this. It's like a civil rights thing, you know. You have to get in there and, you know, don't back down.
Well, that's a very inspiring story. I'd like to thank everybody. Meg Namey, president of SEI Local 49, James Davidson, and Joseph Price for joining us here tonight.
Thanks so much for having us, KBOO.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much.
KBOO Labor Radio, by, for the working class. Thank you.
You forgot, of the working class. Stay tuned for Prison Pipeline. Thanks for listening.
To you, the 9-to-5er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Taking you to faraway places,
silence,
and bringing them home to you. It's the Tiki Cha-Cha Club, KBOO's all-vinyl guilty pleasure. Monday nights, midnight to 1 a.m. on 90.7 FM stereo and around the world at kboo.fm.
Tune into KBOO every weekday at 7 p.m. for Hard Knock Radio. News and views from a hip-hop perspective with Davey D. Hard Knock Radio features in-depth interviews and profiles with community leaders, activists, hip-hop artists, and musicians, giving voice to community concerns and offering a unique forum to explore issues relevant to hip-hop community. That's every weekday at 7 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad.
Billy Rose was a lowrider. Billy Rose was a night fighter. Billy Rose knew trouble like the sound of his own name. Busted on a drunken charge, driving someone else's car. The local midnight sheriff's claim to fame. In an Arizona jail, there is some who tell the tale. I believe he fought the sergeant for some milk that he demanded. Knowing they'd remain the boss, knowing he would pay the cost, they saw he was severely reprimanded.
Good evening and welcome. KBOO's bringing you Prison Pipeline. I'll be your host tonight, Ruth Kovash, and I have a guest named Dan. And thank you for joining us. As always, KBOO is behind some of the best programs that you're ever going to hear on the air, and I'm proud to be a part of Prison Pipeline. With me tonight, I have Dan. So, hi, Dan. How are you doing?
Good evening. I'm doing well. Thank you.
Okay. I'll tell the folks a little bit about you just to get right to the main thing of our discussion tonight. And Dan was released in October of 2014 after serving 17 and a half years. He was convicted of a violent crime. There were no drugs involved. He's okay now. He has employment. He has housing. And Dan, tonight, what I'd like you to share with us is some of the why you are who you are now and so on. Are you ready to spill it all out?
I'll give it my best shot.
Okay. I want to focus on how you came to be, to the changes in your life that made you the man that you are today. I've only spent a few minutes with you. You're a very gentle, soft-spoken, handsome, fine young man. And I would never guess that, oh, I just met a guy who did a violent crime. You just doesn't seem to be your nature. But do you agree that you're a different person today at age 35 than you were at 17 and a half when you were involved in this terrible thing?
Yeah, I would have to say that I'm as different as any 35-year-old is from a 17-year-old, but also more so because perhaps I had that time to really look at who I was and develop myself while I was inside.
So what influences during your incarceration do you think brought about this change?
Well, first and foremost, my family and my community. I had some really great people that were mentors in my life before I went in that I wasn't listening to as well. And then while I was in prison, I met a number of staff who were very supportive of positive change in my life and gave me a great example.
Well, you know, I think in prison, and I've been in and out of prison situations, I only visit, you know, I always tell the guys, when do you get out? And they tell me in 4 or 20 years or something. I say, well, I get out tonight.
But I wish I'd gone your route.
But there's a lot of bad influences in there, too. How come you were making some bad choices at 17, but after you got in, you changed?
Well, I find myself going against the grain quite often. And when I was in society and a teenager, and the grain was go to school, go to college, get a job, be right, I went against that. And when I went to prison and the grain was get involved in this and that politics and drama and, you know, celebrate the every moment what you want, mm-hmm. I went against that grain as well.
So all you needed in your life to become a good guy instead of a bad guy was some bad influence.
I think that's what you just said. I think that's a bit of a stretch.
Okay.
But, you know, who I considered the authority in my culture. And I think one of the things that I gained while inside was some perspective and a better understanding of how I discern what's going on around me. What I really needed was some years where I was in a sober environment and where the people around me weren't, where life was structured.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't trying to catch up or impress or anything like that.
So you said you wanted to be in a sober environment. Had you come from an environment that was not sober?
I came from Portland high schools, and they weren't exactly sober when I was going to them.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, do you agree that now that you're different than you were at your incarceration and that some of the times that these things influenced you, how much of how effective programs and help is has to do with the individual as opposed to how much has to do with the program?
That's a great question. You know, the individual creates the program, really. Each person applies what's going on with them to whatever lessons they're getting and structure they're getting from the program. And that said, one of the unfortunate things is many of DOC programming is mandatory. But each person can enter that class with their own agency. And if they have their own agency, then they can get great things out of it. I believe that one of the most powerful things in prison is the available opportunities to really learn about who you are and get some mentorship through programs. But there are a lot of people who want to go against the grain, as I did. And if they're told you have to do this program, then they feel that's a grain that they don't want to that they don't want to go with.
And some of them seem to just know how to play the system. You know, while they're in the programs, while they're still incarcerated, they're model prisoners, and they praise the program, and they come out, and then they just sort of snicker and say, "Well, boy, did I fool them!" And they go, they go right back to their own ways as if they had never heard a word that was said to them and never believed a thing that they said themselves. Do you think that's true?
How very American of them.
How very American of them.
Yeah, I think that is true. And I think that people learn things, especially from public schools, that really don't serve them in their lives. And prison is full of people from the public school system. And one of the things that they teach you in there is go along, smile, make sure that you're seeming to do the work, and we will pass you along. Mm-hmm. And in prison, it's the same.
Well, I had a son that was very affected by sugar, and he'd get he'd have too much sugar, and he'd act up. Mm-hmm. And as a teenager in particular, and I said to him one time, look, if you have to get attention, instead of acting like the funniest guy or the loudest guy, why don't you act like the nicest guy?
Yeah.
Just act like the nicest guy and see what happens.
Sure, sure.
And once he did that, you know, it's a joke that's been in the family since then. Anytime someone pays anyone in the family a compliment, they say, oh, you were really good, or you're really nice, or oh, I appreciate you. We say, it's an act.
It's an act, yeah.
It's just an act.
Well, what's amazing about acting like the nicest guy is that eventually you get validated enough that you realize, I want to be the nicest guy, and you become the nicest guy.
Oh, you saw right through my plan when
drats.
I told him that.
Drats, yes. I'm sorry.
I just thought if he could just pretend he was nice, he would learn how good it feels to be treated like a nice person instead of treated like the monster in the room or something.
Yeah.
So this a lot of money goes on rehab programs, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of people out there, we know what is happening, and that's because politically the voting and the money supports what's going on. And
yeah.
for us to criticize and say it should or shouldn't stop is a waste of time, because what the money supports, that's what's going to go on.
Mm-hmm.
But you mentioned kids from public school. Do you think things are going on in the public school that, do you mean as opposed to parochial school, or do you just mean?
Well, I think systems that operate hierarchically, as public schools do, there's a lot of evidence that there's a school-to-prison pipeline. And it's unfortunate because it basically is a system that sets somebody up to say, be right in my version of right, or you're wrong. And we're individuals. So in prison, a lot of the best programming are grassroots programming. Program that's created by prisoners for the sake of actual honest rehabilitation, and is supported by volunteers that aren't getting paid and aren't influenced by DOC's checkbook.
Well, I've just made up my mind to never go against you on a debate team, because you're very rational and logical, and I certainly agree with what you've just said.
That's I only great. Do it after 5 o'clock.
After 5 o'clock. I thought you only did it after 20 years of mistakes.
Yeah, finally, that's that too.
You finally got it straight. So some of the rehab programs are kind of phony. I'm proud to say that most of the people I've affiliated myself with are truly dedicated, wonderful people. In fact, mm-hmm. most of them are volunteers. They don't even get paid anything.
Yeah.
And there's other people that think they can get into this because it's easy money, and they just kind of talk a lot of baloney, and they think they fool everybody. Do you think that someone who is not sincere is more harm than good?
In programming?
Mm-hmm.
I think somebody who isn't sincere is more harm than good in all facets of life.
Uh-huh.
Sincerity and really being a true version of who you are, mm-hmm. is what's going to give you the feedback that you need to be the best person you can be. So if you're faking it, then you're already losing.
And it's so easy to spot a fake. They think they're fooling us all.
I think it's very hard sometimes.
Oh, do you?
And, mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think a lot of people are convinced because they're also playing the race.
Mm-hmm.
They're also playing the game. And maybe they spot the fake for what the fake is, but I've watched the revolving door in prison happen over and over again, and I've watched a number of people around me say, oh, he's going to make it, and unfortunately, they don't.
About other people. Now, yeah. You've only been in once, right?
Yes, one time.
But for 17 years. That's a long, hard lesson.
Yeah, I got mine done in one shot.
In one shot. Well, you had a lot of time to think.
I'm glad I used some of it for that.
So, do you have any advice for people who are on the wrong path? How do you get off? What are some of the steps of being from the wrong path getting onto the right path?
Well, one of the things that I would share with classes that I spoke with to or anything on the inside was listen to the people who love you. And you can always really determine easily who the people who love you are. But even if they're not absolutely right that this is the best decision for who you are, they are making their concerted effort to lead you in the right way. Whereas people who just want you around or who are using you are clearly not the ones who love you. Everybody knows that. And I think looking each person that you're dealing with in the eye and really connecting with who they are is an important factor in never doing harm to them. And if you're really looking the person across from you in the eye, then you're not going to do harm.
You're a wonderful guest. You're so astute. I really appreciate all of this.
It's kind of you to say so. I'm still working.
Do you have an employment, or are you going to school, or doing both?
I'm doing both. School is expensive, and so I have to be employed to support myself. And there's been some great grant money and some great even federal funding that's helped me. But
well, we wouldn't want to leave out Harry Olson now.
You're
a part of the Phoenix program.
I am. Phoenix Rising Transitions.
Tell us a little about how you think Phoenix has helped you.
Well, one of the things that I really appreciate about Phoenix is it is one of the grassroots projects that I was telling you about, where people from within the prison system identified a need and addressed it. And they are community-oriented, and they're community action-oriented. So you get out... Not even get out. When you're in, you're involved in making your community a better place. And they follow that through as you get out with a support system. So I think that's integral.
You have to keep your mouth...
I'm sorry. Okay. I think that's integral.
You fade a little bit. Okay. Well, do you think that you were ever really a bad person? Or just someone who made poor choices because your environment and your counseling and your influences were not effective?
And that's a topic that we kind of discuss in prison all the time. And there's a school of thought that nobody's a bad person, they just make bad choices. I think it's very easy to fall back on that. I'm somebody who was making so many bad choices that I could easily be characterized as bad. Mm-hmm. And it's not that I wasn't making good choices as well. They just were far outnumbered by the bad. Mm-hmm. So
sometimes just one bad choice has such overwhelming consequences. That's all you need is one bad choice to mess up your life for quite a few years.
That's very true. It's just not, I don't think I think that's a very small ratio of the people who end up in prison. That said, everybody has the potential for good just as they have the potential for bad. You can make fantastic, loving decisions just as easily, if not easier, than you can make bad, harmful decisions. So why not make the loving, good decisions?
Well, I have strong feelings about that people can change. Mm-hmm. I really hate it when I hear anyone say, once a thief, always a thief, once a murderer, always a murderer. And, you know, I really think they can change.
Yeah.
And then when I say too much about that, someone says, well, then actually you could marry any man you want, and if he wasn't what you want, you could change him. What's wrong with that picture?
I don't know if I quite understand the question, but I like to say when people say once this, once that, always that, I say, well, once 3 o'clock, always 3 o'clock. You know, it's never, everything's always changing. You know, once this date, always that date. You are not defined by one moment in your life. I don't want to be defined by any one moment in my life, whether the worst decision or the best decision.
Well, I think the biggest thing wrong with my statement was they were asking me why I would or wouldn't or how I could change someone.
Oh, yeah, it's not up to you.
I can't change anyone. change is internal. If the person isn't wanting to make that change, you know, even they say they want to make the change, down deep they really, worst scenario, rather have that drug than be changed, you know. So what if they have to sacrifice friends, family, income, a standard of living? They want the drug the most.
Yeah, it's definitely up to the person.
It's a very internal thing.
But support is a fantastic thing to have when you're going through change. Not just incarcerated, but even
any change.
I think getting that support and making that change before you get incarcerated is a fantastic way to go about it.
And how about those who are excuse me, mm-hmm. those who are in lockdown, is it your experience, the people you met and witnessed in your own personal experience, that support from family and friends is important? You want to give that on a scale of 1 to 10, how important you think that might be?
I would say probably a 12-ish.
Very good.
Yeah, I think that positive community, as I mentioned, of people who love you,
mm-hmm.
Whether they're people that you meet inside or people that you've known all your life mm-hmm. or people that you just met before you went to prison, are the biggest factor. And every study has shown that community is the biggest indicator of whether somebody is going to return or not mm-hmm. or go to prison in the first place.
Well, I work with Harry Olson in Phoenix. On Wednesday nights, we go to CRCI, Columbia mm-hmm. River.
Awesome.
And the guests that are there that sit and talk to the prisoners, just 10 minutes of conversation of one-on-one is so enlightening to some of those men that somebody out there cares or knows yeah. or can see their viewpoint.
Yeah.
And the system works so hard at dehumanizing people.
Yeah.
That when the guests come in and humanize them again,
mm-hmm.
I think that in 15 minutes you can make a difference to a person.
You can, yeah. And it's amazing the amount of empathy and self-love that can occur within just a small amount of time of really connecting with a person mm-hmm. across from you.
Right. Well, I think I've known you less than an hour now, and I've gotten to know you very well. And if you could imagine that if instead we had been visiting in a prison section,
mm-hmm.
I think we've both said things to each other that reveal how we feel and what our values are and what our standards are. And I think that's, to you listeners who are listening to us, I hope that our conversation is affecting you the same way, that just hearing Dan's story and listening to the sincerity in his voice and having me vouch for it and confirm some of the things that he says, that you would realize it's not just people who are or have been in trouble. Every day, from mothers and fathers, from when your kid is beginning to talk, mm-hmm. every day that confirms love and support and attitude is going to make a difference. And when they get to be teenagers and they have all kinds of crazy friends and outside influences, that support at home is so vital.
Be the rock.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so Phoenix was an important part of changing your path, correct?
Well, Phoenix was an integral part of my transition. They gave me a ready-made place to live and community of people who really cared about my success.
You lived in a Phoenix house when you first came out?
There's only one Phoenix house, unfortunately.
The
right
Phoenix
now.
House.
And, yeah, so I lived in the Phoenix house.
Now, what's it like living there? They're all people recently released, right?
They are, yeah. And
how many people occupy the house?
At this time, I think it's 5. Mm-hmm. And it ebbs and flows as people progress through their transition. Uh-huh. And it ebbs and flows in how great it is depending on the chemistry of the uh-huh. people that are working together. What's really great is that Phoenix Ready serves you with nonviolent communication and tools in how to work through disputes. So any of the common disputes roommates have in any housing situation are really given an opportunity to succeed because people have the tools to work through them. And that said, the community outside of the house is fantastic
mm-hmm.
as well.
Mm-hmm.
But right now we're working on opening 2 new houses, and there's a campaign, a Welcome Home Phoenix campaign that's happening because we want to open up a house for women releasing and another house for men because we're so often at capacity.
And what can all these listeners who now are convinced how great you turned out because you were in a Phoenix house, and Harry's record is so good of people who are released and go into a Phoenix house for a while before they get out on their own.
Mm-hmm.
What can they do to help?
Well, I think it's important to just become aware of what Phoenix Rising Transitions is doing, as well as what other transition programs are happening in your area. You might not be listening from the Portland or Clackamas County area. And in your own county, there might be other transition houses that are really worth investing in because transition houses reduce crime rate all around them. So we, having that house and having these tools in the community, are reducing the crime in our whole neighborhood mm-hmm. because we're invested in it.
Well, when we look at recidivism and study those who wind up going back, if you just examine for a few minutes what their living and housing conditions are, there's a pattern there. And if they go to a situation where there's support and so mm-hmm. on, it's going to turn out one way. And if they're just thrown out into society and can't find a job and don't have money and wind up on the street, they wind up with drugs, they wind up in crime, and it's mm-hmm. a pattern. It's not something that just happens because this person's better than that person.
Right. No, there's circumstance lead so many people into bad decisions because mm-hmm. and circumstance and culture. So,
well, during incarceration, mm-hmm. shortly before your release, how much preparation for being released were you given?
It's hard to say with my personal experience. I was a administrative assistant in the transitions program for years before I released, and so many of the services I didn't take advantage of, but they were all available to me for one of the biggest things for me was getting my ID and getting my FAFSA prepared and those things. But as a clerk in the transitions program, I knew the importance of actually going through the programs and knowing what services were available and what ways people could approach their transition to best succeed. Mm-hmm. And I encouraged every person, no matter what they knew, to go through the program. And then, unfortunately, myself did not go through the program. But
well, so be it.
Right.
There's a lot of things that the prison staff and the system could provide to people who are about to be released. Mm-hmm. And knowing something like a connection to Phoenix is just going one step beyond what they would ever give. Mm-hmm. Things like a resource guidebook. Have you ever had your hands on a resource book?
Yeah, and yeah. I was given one on my way out. There's a number of resources available and that I was made aware of, which are great. But honestly, I'll say that in my opinion, and it's only one opinion, but in my opinion, the best thing that staff can give you as you're coming out is that humanization that you were talking about. To sit across from you and say, you know, you can succeed. I've seen potential in you. Make good decisions.
Some encouragement.
Yeah.
And of course, having something to come out to. Did you have family or friends just to come out to, or have you had to do this on your own?
Well, I think I was very blessed in that I had family and community. Oh, okay. And the friends that were in my life had been in my life for 18 years for the uh-huh. most part. And there were, I would say, about four or five people who I had met along my incarceration that were very supportive. And then I had the support of the community of prisoners that stayed inside, who still write me letters and say, I hope you're doing good. I'm glad to see you out there. It's great to see you succeeding because now I have hope. And that could be pressure or it can be support. And I just choose to see it as support.
Well, I've been had to defend myself against folks who say, you know, I hang out with these thieves and criminals and murderers and so on. And I say to them, you don't understand. What I work with is the cream of the crop.
No.
Well, you're the cream of the crop is yeah. because they have already made the decision that they don't ever want to come back to prison. They have faced the realization that they took the wrong path and they're chosen a new path, which is a good path. And that's where it starts, is internally these folks that I have been fortunate to work with, they're so much stronger morally and their value system is so much stronger and established in their mind that people who have never been challenged, they just kind of trump along through life, cheating on their taxes, and if the clerk gives them change for a five instead of for a single dollar bill, you know, mm-hmm. they take it and keep it.
Yeah, the adversity builds character.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Well, I'm sorry that we're running out of time, and I know another program will be waiting to get on, so I want to thank you for the candid way in which you shared all your experiences. I want to commend you for being strong enough that, what is that old corny thing, lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. You've been drinking it all up, and I'm really proud to know you.
I like water.
Yeah. I'm happy for you, and I wish you a lot of luck, and I think you're going to continue to be just a real asset. What are you majoring in college?
Film.
Film.
Yeah. Well, thank you for having me on the show and for having the show at all.
I think Prison Pipeline is a great show, and I thank my audience for listening, all the faithful listeners. We know that these are things we talk about have to be talked about more, and I appreciate your attention tonight. And hello to all the guys at OSP and CRCI that might be listening tonight. You know I'm always thinking of you. And Dan and I wish you well.
Indeed, Aminte.
Okay.
Sound of his own name. Busted on a drunken charge, driving someone else's car. The local midnight sheriff's claim to fame. In an Arizona jail, there is some who tell the tale. A Billy fought the sergeant for some milk that he demanded. Knowing they'd remain the boss, knowing he would pay the cost, they saw he was severely reprimanded. In the blackest cell on a block, he hanged himself at dawn, with a note stuck to the bunkhead. Don't mess with me, just take me home. Come and lay.
Every Monday night at 8 o'clock, you can hear this voice alerting you that
you are about to cross the border.
And then follow the footsteps to a two-hour-long sustained environment of uninterrupted sonic art or new electronic, experimental, or postmodern music. Audio that breaks and rewrites the rules to create entirely new worlds of sound. Where will you be on Mondays at 8 when the door slams shut?